You can hear me, Terry?
Yeah, you late.
I am not late, sir. The podcast has already started, so I'm just going to start this. And we are back. Welcome back to another episode of the Deep Press Cincinnati Sports Fan Podcast. I am your host, Jesse. This is a special podcast because I know you guys have been wondering, where is Terry Killens? Is Terry Killens going to be on this podcast? But he's been avoiding me as usual because I know it's been really tough trying to get him on the podcast, but I know he's been ducking me because people don't want to be on this podcast because I answer or ask the tough question. But we finally got Terry. He finally manned up and be on this podcast. So welcome, Terry, to the podcast. How you doing today? And I know there's a lot of background noise, so bear with me.
Whatever. You late. You late. You late.
Dude,
and I'm doing fantastic. And I was about to make you even more depressed because I was going to be a diva and be like, you late. You
dude,
late.
You literally said 7 o'clock and I was ready by
dude,
like...
No, when you've been taught, like I've been taught, if you're on time, you're late. If you late, don't bother. Come on, man. If you early, you on time. So you should have been calling me at 6:58, or not calling me, rather, sending the text at 6:58 so I could have hit the button, hit the link and been on this call at 7 o'clock.
I am trying to be as professional as can be, but this man gives me shit all the time. But you're on the podcast, so if you guys don't know who Terry Killens is, he's a former NFL player and now he's a current NFL referee. I'm just gonna go through all you accolades, so I'm pretty much gonna be gassing up for the next like 2 minutes. You ready for this?
Yeah, because I like to hear it too. Let's go.
Oh, my goodness. So, Terry is from Cincinnati, Ohio. He went to high school at Purcell Martin. You guys don't know where that is.
Pause. I'm about to correct you right there. It's Purcell Marion. Get it right.
No, I think it's – okay. You're right.
Good night, man. You crashing and burning right now, homeboy.
Oh, see, I knew this was going to happen. I knew he was going to just give me shit on my podcast. Anyways, he played football. You played football and basketball, right?
I was a three-sport athlete, man.
Oh, yeah, he did track.
Football, basketball, and track. Come on now.
He wasn't fast. Hey, guys, he wasn't fast at track. There's a reason why he didn't.
Pause. You want to go there? I done had this debate. Hey, we can Google it right now. I was in the state finals. I finished just off the podium.
For what event? What event was that?
100 and a 200.
Man,
I got like, smoked in the 200, but I think I was like I came in sixth place in 100. But you got to think, I'm about 220 at this point, and I'm running up against guys who are going to school. They're going D1 and track scholarships.
Yeah, but I didn't think you were that fast. I thought you were more of like a high jumper since you're tall. That's what I thought.
I was a burner.
All right, so you back in your heydays, back in like, 1942, you were a three-star athlete. Okay, got that out of the way in high school. All right, so this man played college football at Penn State University. If you ever heard of Penn State University, I'm trying to be nice, but when it comes to their football program, great regular season team. But when it comes to playing against big-time teams in their conference, like Ohio State, in Michigan, they don't play so well. So I'm sorry that I'm taking jabs in your college team. So my bad on that.
Look, hey, the data doesn't lie. It's hard for me to argue, but yes, I attended and graduated from the Pennsylvania State University, nicknamed Penn State.
The
Nittany Lions. It's the Pennsylvania State University.
Oh, absolutely. So now you're being like Ohio State fans. Just like
I'm not being like anything. I'm it. Pennsylvania State University. Google it. It's all facts.
From 1992 to 1995, you played linebacker and defensive line. And
that's right.
You were a key player in the 1994 Penn State team that went undefeated that season, 12-0, ranked number 2 in the AP and coaches poll, and defeated Oregon in the Rose Bowl 38-20. And on that team, remember your boy Kijana Carter, the running back?
Come on, man. Yeah, Kijana Carter. Let's go. You know
his name. Yeah. Okay. People have butchered that name before. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. He was taken number 1 in the 95 NFL draft by the Cincinnati Bengals. Unfortunately, that didn't really work out. But he was a stud in college.
Also, yeah, but he had an outstanding.
I know. He had a great career in Penn State. I wasn't discrediting him that, right? And I think we lost Terry. I hope he comes back.
Party.
You're back? Okay, dude. We lost you for like 20 seconds, man.
That's this thing you got me on, this app you got me on.
I think it's your Wi-Fi. I hope you're on strong
Wi-Fi. Oh.
Sir. Yeah. Yeah. You gotta be on strong Wi-Fi, sir. Just like all the guests on this podcast. But also, your senior year in Penn State, you balled out. Second team all Big Ten honors. And I watched a couple of your senior highlights on YouTube. If you want to go to YouTube, type in Terry Killen's 1995 Penn State senior highlights. You did pretty well, sir. So I'll give you kudos on that. So after your senior season, you were drafted in third round, 74th overall pick in the 1996 NFL draft. By then, the Houston Oilers. You played four seasons with the Tennessee Titans. You made a Super Bowl appearance in 1999 against the St. Louis Rams, a.k.a. the greatest show on turf. Unfortunately, you guys lost that game in heartbreaking fashion. We won't talk about that because I know that's an open wound for you. We won't have to.
Not really. I can talk about it. Yeah, It was literally over 20-some years ago, 20-plus years ago.
Talk to me about that game, and we'll talk about just the lead-up to it and Super Bowl media and all that stuff. What do you remember from that?
Oh, you jumping right in. You done with my accolades. Okay.
Let's do it, man.
So what I remember was the run we went on leading up to the game, starting with the wild card game against the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. The talk in around the league was the winner of this wild card game, the Buffalo Bills at Tennessee Titans, would probably represent the AFC in the Super Bowl, even though the team that finished as the number one seed in the AFC was the Jacksonville Jaguars. But we'll get to that story in a second. So playing the Buffalo Bills in the first wild card game, first playoff game, at the time, Adelphia Coliseum in Nashville, Tennessee. The buildup was phenomenal. The place was buzzing. This was pre-Nashville, before, you know, the Nashville we all know now. It wasn't like that. Football was new to the area. Pro football was new to the area. We had just moved to Nashville. Actually, we just moved and started playing in Nashville in 1998. But when we moved to Tennessee in 97, we played our home games at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis, which is, we all, you know, if you don't know the geography of Tennessee, Memphis is probably about 3 hours, right around three and a half hours from Nashville. They're not that close. And they're a big rivalry. They're rivalry cities, kind of like Cleveland and Cincinnati. They're rivalry. So, we started off that way. Yeah, it's a rival. Those city's a rival.
Yeah.
Hold on.
That, but I don't know about that.
So we're in that wild card game. It's a close contest. Buffalo takes the lead in the fourth quarter with, you know, very little time on the clock left.
14 seconds.
And we all huddle up together, and our special teams coach says we're going to do the home run throwback play. And that's the play that led to the Music City Miracle. Yep. Backstory behind that is Derek Mason was actually the guy who was supposed to take that lateral from Frank Wycheck. Derek Mason was down with a concussion. So Kevin Dyson was the backup. Nobody could find Kevin at the time. So everybody's looking for Kevin. They finally find him on the sideline, get him some water. Special team coach Alan Lowry runs up to him, and he just says, make sure you stay behind Wycheck. And we broke. We worked on that play throughout the course of the season every Friday and Saturday. because we had a game earlier in the season where we were doing kind of like the ordinary thing that teams do when they're in that situation, just pitch the ball backwards and hopefully something breaks, kind of like with Stanford and Cal. Never works like that. So our special teams coordinator, Alan Lowry, created this play. And like I said, we practice it every Friday and Saturday when I was with the Titans. And it was a big joke. Nobody took it seriously because we thought it would never work. So here we are in this, the biggest game of the Tennessee Titan franchise, and actually Houston Oilers franchise. And we got our backup return man in the game. And basically it sets up perfect for us. Buffalo Squid kicks the ball down. But the thing was, Frank.
Uh-oh, we lost Terry. Hopefully he'll come back real soon, next couple of seconds. Such a good story to tell about the Music City Miracle. Oh, it's got to be his Wi-Fi. I told this man before the podcast, get on strong Wi-Fi. Terry, are you still there? And I know he got his headphones on, so it got to be a combination of that and the...
Here, can you hear me?
Oh, I finally hear you, man.
You know what? You know what's happening? Every time my phone shuts, like closes, the app, it pauses on my end. That's what it is.
You're good.
Okay.
You can continue your Music City Miracle story.
So I left off. Where did I leave off?
You were talking about how you guys didn't really take the lateral plays all serious and all that stuff.
Okay. So back to the ball game. Buffalo Squid kicks it. And it comes up a little short where Lorenzo Neal, who is our starting fullback, he ends up with it, runs back and hands it to Frank Wacek. And I think that was kind of the cause of the Buffalo Bills kind of getting out of their kickoff assignment lanes. So when Frank got the ball, like, it was like everybody from the Buffalo Bills went inside, and that's exactly what we wanted them to do. And then he threw it back to Kevin. He lateraled the ball back to Kevin Dyson. Kevin catches it, and we have a wall set up. And, like, on the field, it was dead silent until, like, only reason we knew it was working, if you were on the field for the play at that time, was the crowd noise just began to grow and grow and get louder and louder, and up until a point where it was just deafening. And I was blocking the kicker, and I always say I probably should have left the kicker alone, because Kevin would have scored regardless, because we had such the wall was set up perfectly. And it was a mural of this particular play in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. And I was with my son and my nephew, and we were up there, and I was showing them, and I was like, I was part of this team, and you couldn't even see me in a picture because how they took the picture, they cut it off. And you only thing you could see was kind of like my shoulder and a little bit of the kicker, and I was blocking the kicker. And if I'd have just passed the kicker up, I would have been in that mural in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, so when Kevin scored, the crowd went nuts, and it was so loud. I started to hyperventilate because I was so excited. But what people don't know was we still needed to kick the point after touchdown. And also, it was still time on the clock where we had the kickoff, kick the ball back off to the Buffalo Bills. And that was kind of crazy because they still had a chance. It was still time on the clock. So we ended up kicking it off to them, you know, making a tackle or whatever, game over. Now, that's just the wild card game. We had to go on the road to Indianapolis, led by Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison. What's the running back's name?
Edgerrin James,
Dallas Clark. They had I think he was on the team. Maybe he wasn't anyway. But they had a stacked team that year, too. So They had a stacked team. We went up there and beat film in Indianapolis, and that led us on to the AFC Championship game, which was in Jacksonville. At that time, Jacksonville was 15-2. That they had beat Miami, the Miami Dolphins, like 50-something to 20-something. They blew out the Miami Dolphins and retired Dan Marino. So everybody just thought that we didn't have a chance. And we went in there and whooped Jacksonville's butt. And that was the game, that was the championship game, the AFC championship game. And that's the game that put us into Super Bowl 34.
How was that feeling after you beat them handily and you just like realized, oh, snap, I'm going to Super Bowl? Like that feeling.
It was crazy because, like, the thing I remember about, like, my wife, and, you know, my cousin who lived in Florida at the time, and his buddy, he actually just passed away from cancer. They were at the game. We were all taking, I remember we were taking pictures because this memory is vivid because my cousin just sent me some pictures of his buddy Ron, like I said, who just passed away of cancer. And they were all at the game and just watching that, you know, looking at those pictures brought back so many memories how, you know, after the game, my wife, who was pregnant with my 23.
Oh, no. Out of all the guests I've had, I probably had like two or three guests. My man, Terry, when it comes to the Wi-Fi connection, I'm not trying to dog him, but my goodness. He'll be back.
I'm back. Now I know what happened. My phone, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
My phone keeps shutting. I don't know how to keep my phone open. Because every time it closes, the app shuts down.
Is your phone on 10%, sir?
No, I'm just saying when it's, you know, the screen is lit up and then it goes black. Like every time it does that, that's when you can't hear me.
You're on Android times, man.
Well, if you would have just called me like any other podcast I do.
continue on your story, man.
So like I said, and then when we flew back to Nashville, the airport was just packed full of people. It was almost a claustrophobic feeling because it was people everywhere. Remember, this is before 9/11, so everybody could get into the airport. Like, where, you know, once we got off the plane, it was a line of people backed up forever, and just it was almost like we were walking down a gauntlet of just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people on both sides of us. And I remember getting that claustrophobic feeling. Now, mind you, this particular year, we didn't have a bye week between the AFC Championship game, the NFC Championship game, and the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was the following week. So we didn't have a lot of time to sit and think, you know, like, oh, we just won the AFC Championship and going to the Super Bowl. Like, literally, we got home after midnight. We got back to Nashville after midnight on Monday morning. And we had to turn around and go back to our homes, come back to the facility with our stuff, and then get all the information and do all the preparation for getting ready to leave to go down to Atlanta because Tuesday was media day.
That's crazy at that time.
It was a fast time. I think that's only happened twice in I guess the Super Bowl history where there was no bye week between games. I'm not sure about that. I know trolls will Google that and try to prove me wrong. It's like, nah. For that time, we didn't have a bye week. So everything was very, very fast.
Man. So tell me about Super Bowl Media Day. Everybody, like, I feel like teams that are representing AFC or NFC teams, obviously, they look forward to media day. Tell me, how was that? And I remember I was watching a clip of you talking to the media. I'm like, this guy.
Right. So media day is a little bit different now. It's more of an event. Okay. Yeah, it's more of an event now. Back then, you had like your starting 22, they had Boots. Mm-hmm. Well, really, it wasn't even your starting 22. It was mainly your headliners, let's just say, like Eddie George, Stephen McNair on offense. Then we had Javon Curse because he was like the rookie of the year, and I think he was close to leading the league in sacks. I know he broke a rookie sack record at that time. And then like one of our linebackers and one of our DBs, Shamari Rowe, they all had like boots, kind of like what you see today, but everybody didn't have one. And the strange thing was ESPN came up to me with a microphone and a camera, and I took it and I took off with it. And I feel like I can claim this. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but I feel like I was the first, kind of Super Bowl, media day correspondent that, you know how now they do it. They send comedians, they send little kids, and they go up and ask crazy questions to the players and stuff like that. I think I was the first, and I think if you can Google it, I don't know. You know, it's a lot out there in Google land, but I'm gonna say claim. I'm the self-proclaimed first ESPN kind of comedy analyst that went around back in, I guess that was 99, 2000, 2000 Super Bowl. That's kind of started that. So ESPN, where my residuals at, baby. Nah.
This guy. All right. So media day, you were the first person to get like the real interview from the correspondents. I mean, okay.
Self-proclaimed.
Okay. So let's go to game day. What do you remember waking up that Sunday morning in Atlanta? I know there was bad weather that day. Where were you? I know you were nervous as no other, right? I'm guessing because you're playing the Super Bowl.
I mean, you know, when people talk about nerves, I don't look at nerves as being a negative. I think that's a good thing because I'm passionate about what I do. I'm excited and I'm looking forward to it. And anybody, anything like, hell, you know, meeting a significant other or going out on a date, sure, you're going to be nervous. But I don't look at that as being a negative because, like, if you look at nerves as being a negative, it's because you're not prepared. And I felt like at that time I was prepared for that game. We had played St. Louis once earlier in the season and won a close game with them, against them. But, like, a lot of that game is a blur, right? You know, I know it was a close game. I think I had a tackle or two in the game. I know one on special teams for sure. I don't remember exactly how many plays I played. But it was a hard-fought contest. We had some difficult injuries that we had to deal with leading up to and during that game. And when you play a team like the greatest show on turf with Kurt Warner and Isaac King was on that team. Marshall Faulk.
Isaac Bruce,
who's a Hall of Famer. Torrey Holt, who's a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
You know, I mean, as I think about it, they had five Hall of Famers on that team because Orlando Pace was on that team.
Yeah.
So if my math is correct, you got Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, I think Torrey Holt, and Orlando Pace. That's five right off the top of my head. My memory not that good. So, you know, they had a really stacked team. But, you know, a couple plays, ball, you know, bounced their way, and they came out on top. Everybody talks about that play. Steve McNair played a hell of a game. So did Eddie George. But everybody talks about the play at the one-yard line. And I remember being at that play, and I remember standing next to Yancey Bigfin on that play, and he was calling it out because he was actually injured, and that was his play. You're talking about somebody being in the right place in the right time and ready to go. That was Kevin Dyson. Remember when I was talking about the wild card game in the Music City Miracle? Kevin Dyson was the backup return man on that play. It should have been Derek Mason. Just think of Kevin Dyson. Would have caught that pass, which he did, and broke that tackle and walked into the end zone and sent that game into overtime. He's already in Tennessee Titan lore as it is.
Yeah.
and it's a legend because of Music City Miracle. Could you imagine if we came back and won that Super Bowl? It would have been great. So that actual play, that slant play, was actually a play for Yancey Bigfin. And the linebacker from the St. Louis Rams made an outstanding play, kept him out the end zone. We fell about a yard short, as history says. And really, I didn't know how close we were because where I was standing on the sideline during that play, when the confetti shot up. Okay. When the confetti shot up, it was blue and gold. And you know, that told me right then and there, we ain't going to overtime. It's not even close. Because I thought maybe they would have to look at it on replay. But once that confetti went up in the air, I knew it was over. So instead of watching, you know, the confetti fall to the ground and the Rams get up on that stage and accept that Vince Lombardi trophy, I took off to the locker room.
Wait, did you see them getting the Lombardi trophy handed to them? You were still on the field?
Nah, I didn't. Oh. You hear me say I took off to the locker room. I was gone,
okay.
Brother.
Okay, my bad.
Yeah, I was gone. Bye.
Because there's players in today's NFL, they'll stay and watch, like, the other team that they lost to handing over the NFC or AFC conference title trophies or the Super Bowl just for, like, extra motivation for next year.
That's like watching somebody kiss your girlfriend. Why are you still dating her? Gone. I don't want to see that. I'm good.
That's wild. Kevin Dyson, part of two crazy memorable plays in NFL history. Man. Yep, right. So after the Super Bowl, usually the losing team, in today's NFL, the losing team will go out, but some players will just, like, stay back in the hotel and just, like, they don't want to do anything because they're devastated. What'd you do after the Super Bowl?
True. I caught up with my family. We had, when I say we, the Tennessee Titans had a, basically it was a post-game party, but it was nobody there. It was kind of depressing. Like, to be honest with you, like, nobody really came. Nobody really felt like celebrating anything. You know, after the game. So, I mean, I went down there, you know me, I got some food, I ate, talked to a few people, and then I went back upstairs because it was already late. We were on the East Coast time. It was late. And like I said, nobody was really doing anything. You didn't want to leave the hotel because the weather was terrible. That week in Atlanta, Georgia, it was an ice storm. The state of Georgia is, and let alone the city of Atlanta, is not prepared for an ice storm. They didn't have salt. They don't have the manpower, the vehicles. At that time, I don't know what they like now. At that time, they weren't prepared for that type of storm, and it was terrible. The weather was bad. But, I didn't do really that much anything after the game. And I went back, you know, back to my hotel room with my pregnant wife was sleeping, and that was it.
Man, yeah, we won't talk about what happened that night. We won't go into details of that.
What?
Nah, we don't have to talk about it. Nah, bro. Just other things that happened.
I was about to say, didn't you just hear me say my pregnant wife? Ain't nothing happened. I went to sleep.
I'm just saying, like, other things happened that night. You know, significant stuff happened that night. You know?
Nah, what you talking about?
Someone getting stabbed or whatever.
Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah, fast forward. That's it. We exactly. Good. we good.
Okay. So after you left Tennessee, you played one season with the Niners, and then you played one season with the Seahawks, and then you retired after the 2002 season. Is that correct, sir?
That's right.
Also, after you retired, you did have a workout with the Bengals, right? After the 2002 season. That was offseason. They fired Dick LeBeau and hired Marvin Lewis. And
correct.
They didn't sign you, unfortunately, but I did write a quote that Marvin Lewis was very candid with you. Would you mind sharing what Marvin said to you after the
workout? All right. Yeah, so I had retired. Yeah, I was still kind of doing workouts and seeing up. This was in 2002. I was still doing Yeah, no, 2003. I'm sorry. It was 2003. I was still working out for teams and trying to get on somewhere. And I figured if I waited long enough, I could have got picked up. So, but during my workout with the Bengals, Marvin Lewis and Leslie Frazier were the two who were like Marvin Lewis was the head coach. And I believe Leslie Frazier at the time was the linebacker defensive coordinator.
Yep.
Thing. And so Leslie Frazier told me, like, man, you had a really good workout. And I was working out against guys who were like really, like probably about 10 years younger than me at the time. So I'm jamming. I'm in shape. I'm in super good shape. I'm showing these young bucks up. And Leslie tells me, like, I had a great workout. So I was like, all right, cool. So Marvin came over, and Marvin was just like, you know, good workout. Thanks for coming out. And I was, and, you know, at this point in time, I'm a veteran making veteran minimum. That would be my salary cap hit for him. And Marvin was like, you know, thanks for coming out, but, you know, we're not going to sign you. And I was like, at this point, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to ask a question, because I was just told I had a really good workout. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So I asked Marvin, I was like, let me ask you something. Why won't you sign? And he was like, Terry, I'm going to be honest with you. We could sign two rookies and still be under the price that we would have to pay you to do the same thing. Basically be a backup linebacker, special teams player. And I asked Marvin, I said, Marvin, does the rest of the league feel that way about this veteran minimum? And he was like, yes. So at that point in time, I already knew, like,
oh man, I thought we were gonna go. I thought that was gonna be the last time he's gonna cut off.
You know what? I forgot to hit my phone. I forgot.
You're good. You're good.
So getting back, Marvin told. Where did I leave off at? What Marvin told me
about, just like, if we signed you, if we signed like two rookies to that same level of like the money,
right? To that, they would come out cheaper.
Yeah.
And paying me one person the veteran minimum to do basically what they could get two rookies to do, backup special teams linebacker. So I asked Marvin, did the rest of the teams, clubs, were they going in that direction, kind of like that? And he was like, yeah, most of them would, because it's a copycat league. Mm-hmm. So at that moment, I knew I was done. Mentally, I was somewhat checked out anyway, because my heart wasn't into it as much as it used to be. And it was turning into more of a business instead of the game that I loved. So I just decided when I was leaving at that time, Paul Brown Stadium, that I was done. So I took my flip phone. It's a little bit better than the one I have now. It's like, nah, kid. I took my flip phone. I called my wife and I told her, go ahead and type up my retirement letter, because I'm sending it into the league. I'm faxing it, I should say, into the league that afternoon. And that's what I did. I didn't even have to think twice about it. And that was pretty much, I think it was right around May of 2003 that I ended my playing career.
7 seasons, 50 solo tackles, 1 sack, 4 forced fumbles. You told me that you could have got more. When it comes to
tackles. Oh man, yo, my stats ain't gonna raise no eyebrows because, like I said, I was a special teams player, backup linebacker.
Right.
And but I'll tell you this: when I was in college, my freshman year, and I played as a freshman. I didn't start at Penn State until my senior year because you know they kept putting seniors over me, which I didn't agree with. And anybody will tell you I was better than them, but I think mentally I wasn't as strong as they were. But I had a coach named Tom Scrap Bradley, and he told me that, Terry, you keep playing special teams the way you do. He said, not only will you be in the NFL, but you can turn this into a career in the NFL. And I always remembered that. So I always wanted to be a starter in the National Football League, and I think I started 1 or 2 games, maybe 3. But that I got to live out my dream of
for sure.
Being a professional football player in the National Football League. Now, was I a Hall of Famer or some, you know, five-star? Absolutely not. I was a blue-collar team player that filled the roster spot on that 53-man roster, and I'm proud of that. It's easier for me to talk about now as I mature and think about all the, you know, accolades that I did achieve while I was in the National Football League and throughout my career. But I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and you played 7 seasons in the NFL. That's still pretty impressive.
No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. So after football, what was next? You wanted to do – so I written down that you wanted to do radio and coaching first, right?
Well, the first thing was I wanted to be a stay-at-home dad because at that time in 2003, I had 2 kids.
Yeah.
And my wife had supported me throughout my career pretty much since we had met when we were in high school. I was 15 when we met in high school, and she followed me from high school to college to National Football League, and she was always very supportive of everything at every stage. So, you know, I wanted to support her and let her kind of live out her dreams, which she did when she opened the Women's Clothing Boutique in Deerfield Township, Mason, Ohio, called Missy and Jack. So I stayed at home with our 2 kids. I would run our oldest daughter to kindergarten and stay at home with my oldest son and watch Young and the Restless and go work out and then go pick her up. And, you know, I'd get them home, get them in the bath because my wife, she closed the store at 9 o'clock and she would come home and they would be in bed. And I just wanted her to come home and, you know, be able to kiss them and, you know, so she could relax a little bit. So I did that for almost maybe 3 years. And then I was over it. I got bored. I needed something else. So I tried coaching on the high school level. And I went back to my alma mater and coached for them. That was a short stint because I was just coming off of being an NFL football player. And that was my full-time job. So it's kind of like, you know, I describe it as trying to like teaching Mandarin to a group of second graders, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been speaking Mandarin all my life, and now I'm trying to teach it to them. I don't know how to teach it to second graders, so that was a tough adjustment for me. So then I try to go into another direction because I was a communications major at Penn State. And so I always thought like I could.
I think that's number 5 that we've lost Terry, but he'll be back in like 5 seconds.
2 seconds. I'm back.
He's back.
Dang. So dang it, I keep forgetting to hit my phone so it stay lit.
You're good. You're good.
So I got into radio locally, AM 1230 The Buzz, with Eric E.T. Thomas, formerly a Cincinnati Bengal, yep. Retired, and Wayne Box Miller, who actually does some reporting for the Bengals.
Still out here. Yep.
Yeah, he's still out there. Good dudes. They had a really good show, and I really enjoyed being on it. I was like, special guest commentary. I did special guest commentary, like especially right around the Super Bowl and, you know, playoff time. So I did that for a little while. But it didn't give me that fulfillment that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. That I lost with, you know, when I retired from the National Football League. So I would go to games. I went to watch Bengals games for some time. I guess this was in, you know, they was going 8-8 every year at that time, early in Marvin's career, Marvin Lewis. And then I stopped doing that. And like I said, I was kind of floundering out there because I didn't know what I wanted to do next. And then the buddy of mine, who's a Cincinnati police officer, we were just having a conversation and he was like, bro, I'm at this basketball game. And it was like maybe a seventh or eighth grade game. And he was like, I was talking to this guy who's an official. He was telling me that he works pretty much every day, makes about 40 bucks a game, and he works two games. And he does it on the weekend, and he works a bunch of games on the weekend. He said it's a good way to make a little extra money. I was like, you know what? I'm open to it. So we looked into it, but you know how I procrastinate my potty. So basically, I procrastinated for so long, I missed the deadline for the signups. That winter went by, spring and summer came along, and something just hit me. And I was like, you know what? I want to look into this officiating thing. And at first I was dead set against officiating football because I was like, I don't want to be outside in the elements. It's too hot in the summertime. It rains in the fall. And then by the end of the season, it's freezing outside. And I was like, I don't want to deal with that. Back in them days, they didn't have, most schools did not have the field turf. They were all just straight grass and they would be muddy. So I was like, I didn't want to deal with the elements, but nothing else was being offered at the time, but football classes. So I got on the Ohio High School Athletic Association website. I found an instructor that was teaching a class. His number was on the site, called him, and basically what he told me was, we're starting a class this week. Bring a check for $100 and I'll get you started. And that's how my officiating career took off. Now, I didn't think it would go to the heights it has. I just wanted to officiate. Basically my goal and my dream at the time was to officiate like top-notch high school football in this area. GCL, GMC, GWOC, all up in the day. I wanted to officiate those high school games. Mm-hmm. But the officiating craft grabbed me and basically made me fall in love with a game that I was already in love with all over again, just simply because of that. I was learning something new about the game that I thought I knew everything about. And it was an awesome feeling. So I started, getting into it, and I'm reaching out to assigners, because that's what you have to do when you come through the class. They'll give you a list of assigners. You got to reach out to them. Let them know you're a new official, give them your name. And like, I still had a little bit of juice to stay here in this area because of my high school career. Some of the guys that were still officiating football officiated me when I was in high school. And I thought that was cool shit, and they did too.
Nice.
So a couple of them were signing leagues at this time. And when you start off officiating in Ohio, you got to start pretty much at the bottom. You can't officiate anything higher than JV level football. You got to work your way up for 2 years, and then you got to test up to become a class one official to be certified to officiate varsity football. And then you got to find a crew. You got to be on a crew. And then, and the rest, you just move on from there. So I went in full speed ahead, man. I was emailing assigners, calling them. I would call Pee Wee assigners because I wanted to get involved with the Pee Wee game because I just wanted to work. And that's kind of how it started on the scholastic end for me. And then I met a guy named Tom Burns, who is a local legend in high school officiating. He was looking for actually somebody to work on a college crew he was putting together for a Division III. And basically it was to work games at Mount St. Joe, Thomas More, right? because they were entering a conference called the President Athletic Conference, which are schools in like Pennsylvania, West Virginia, kind of far. And, you know, you don't when you work at the D3 level, you don't make a lot of money. I think at the time it might have been $100. And for this assigner to send guys from West Virginia, Pennsylvania, all the way down to basically Kentucky, you know, the far reaches of Southwest Ohio for like $100. And they had to come after their high school games because most guys who work in Division III still work high school. And I did it too. He was putting his crew together for that. So we had to go audition for this guy in West Virginia. So we drove up to West Virginia one night after I'm talking about the mountains of West Virginia too, after a Friday night football game, and worked this game. And this is when I knew, I was like, yo, I want to do college too. Because I was terrible. I will say that. I used to watch. So they would put the game on us back then on DVD. And then I would bring it home and watch it. And I was terrible. I was bad.
Do you still have those DVDs?
I sure do.
just to look back.
Yeah, I mean, I was terrible. I was not very good. I did not know the game because this might have been I worked my first college varsity game before I worked a high school varsity game.
That's
wild. Because I wasn't on a high school crew, so I didn't have a high school game, a high school varsity game week one. I had one the second week. So I worked the first week of college football. And then my first varsity game was the next week. And I was kind of on a crew that was put together kind of by Tom Burns, because Tom had his own high school crew. They were top notch. But he did us a favor. It was five of us that weren't picked to be on a varsity crew. So we put our own together just so we could work varsity games. And Tom assigned the Southern Buckeye League out in Eastern Cincinnati. It's out there like Claremont County, Brown County, in that area, because it was like Western Brown, Amelia, Glenestee, those schools. Felicity, you know, we used to work all the way. I used to drive up 32 like there wasn't no tomorrow. But I started off with him in college, and then he hired me onto his high school crew, and it really took off for high school for me, because Tom was getting the Kirk Herb Street Classic games that they were playing at Nippert. My first game with his crew, we had a game at Nippert Stadium. I think the next day we were playing at Colerain, we were working at Colerain, and it was Taft, who had just came off of a state championship, and they were playing a team from Washington, D.C. So, like when I was introduced at that next level of high school ball, it really took off. And like I said, I was still working college. I wanted to be a part of the college scene here in the tri-state area. So I started going to camps and clinics and stuff like that. And then I started meeting people from the Ohio Athletic Conference, the North Coast Conference, and the Heartland Conference. And all that, that's Indiana and Ohio. And then I started the GLVC. I was meeting, that was the Division II. I was meeting those people at camps and clinics locally. And when I talk about camps and clinics, that's where high school officials go to get better, basically, to learn the art of officiating from Division I, higher division, guys who've been around for a long time. Officials that they are like clinicians, and they help you in your journey to progress to be a better official. I know I got long-winded there, Mupati.
No, man. I love it. I love it. So after you did high school officiating games, you went to the American Athletic Conference in 2013. You were offered a supplement official job.
Yep. Wait a minute. You skipped a whole bunch though.
Oh.
So before I got into the American,
okay.
I worked in the SIAC, which is the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference.
Okay.
Harold Mitchell, I had went to a camp, which I'm going to tomorrow, in Baltimore. It's called the Tom Beard Football Officials Clinic. And it's one of the biggest clinics on the East Coast where you go and learn how to become a better official. And you got all kinds of clinicians. You got NFL, Division I from all the Power Five conferences. You have NFL supervisors. You have college supervisors. All at this clinic. I went to the clinic and met a guy who worked for Harold Mitchell. Harold Mitchell, the SIAC, was bringing in two schools. Now, the SIAC are HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities. They were bringing in Central State and Kentucky State, both of which in our area. They were looking for officials in this area. Here I am. Talk about sometimes just being lucky rather than good. I was lucky a few times. Well, they were having a, after that camp, they were having a.
He'll be back.
My bad. I'm back.
You're good. You're doing well so far. It's not like a minute.
Right. So like I said, I was at this camp. I met Ken Dollar, who worked for Harold Mitchell. Harold Mitchell was having a clinic, a mini clinic at Central State because they were coming into the SIAC, which is a conference he was the supervisor of. Had that clinic, he hired me out of that clinic. Now, I took this job because I was kind of thinking ahead. I said, my goal is to get to Division I, whatever Division I it was. Harold Mitchell had Division II SIAC, but he also had the SWAC, which is a Division I FCS, which is another HBCU conference, right? So if you know the HBCU schools, they're all in the Southeast, right?
Yep.
So we are in Big Ten country. All my contemporaries and my peers are trying to get into the Big Ten footprint. And this is when they have footprints in college football as well, because the conferences were still basically located in their geographical regions. SEC in the Southeast, Big Ten in the Midwest, Pac-12 in the West, Big 12 was kind of in the Midwest as well, and the ACC was basically on the East, on the East Coast. So you would be drafted, because of where you live, you would be geographically placed in one of those conferences if you could get in. I kind of took a different route. I figured my fastest route to D1 was going with Harold Mitchell because he had the D2 conference and another D1 or Division I FCS, which was the SWAC. And people thought I was crazy for doing that. My wife thought I was a little crazy because of his travel. So Harold Mitchell told me, like, if I hire you, you're not just going to work Kentucky State, which is 2.5 hours, and Central State, which is 40 minutes. You're going to have to go to schools like Tuskegee, Clark Atlanta, Augusta State, like, you know, schools that are in South Georgia and Alabama, Fort Valley State, Alcorn, like schools like that, like in Mississippi. I was like, you know what? This is my dream. This is what I want to do. You know, I'm fine with that. So that's what I did. But, you know, I had to supplement travel income because I didn't want to take money out of my house to fund my travel for officiating. So I had to work peewee games. Peewee games, you make about $40 a game. That's why it's hard to find officials to, you know, work varsity and high school games, because I can work on a Saturday and make $400. Easy. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. So what I used to have to do was when I took that route, I would work peewee games, and I would save all that money. I would take that money and fund my travel to Atlanta. Once I got to Atlanta, I would have somebody on my crew pick me up who lived in Atlanta, because most of my crew lived in Atlanta with the SIC, lived in Atlanta, and I would drive to whatever game that we were going to, because Atlanta was kind of centrally located to all the schools, right? Mm-hmm. I was only in that conference for a year, and then I got promoted to the SWAC,
And that was a little bit different because those schools were in Mississippi. They were a little further out, you know. But at that time, I was kind of being moved around to three different conferences. Like, so I was in the SWAC, Southwestern Athletic Conference. I worked in the MEAC, which is another HBCU conference. And that was like Florida A&M, Howard, Bethune-Cookman at the time. It was that. So I'm going to, like, I just named the school in Washington, D.C., and Daytona, Florida, and who was the other one I said? Florida A&M was in Tallahassee. So I just, and you know, South Carolina State, which is in Orangeburg, South Carolina. So just imagine me flying from Cincinnati, and I got to get to all these different places. But the pay is not, it's good, but it's not great. It's not fun and all that, because we had to stay in a hotel. All that got, when you work college football, you get a flat fee, right? So all that is all that, the travel, the car rental, the hotel, the food, all that's coming out of my flat fee paid from my college game. And then at the end of the year, I owe taxes on all that stuff too. So boom, 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 right? So now you can talk about how I got hired in American in, I think it was 13. Yeah, it was 13 because I was a supplemental official that year too.
Right.
So I worked four games in American. I worked four games in the SWAC, and I worked four games in the MEAC. So I still ended up with total
one season.
It was still like college football season back then was 12 games. That was a full season.
That's
right. And sometimes you had a bye week somewhere in there. Okay. But okay. I worked 12 games that season, working in, you know, a total of 12 games working in three different conferences.
Crazy.
And then right after that, so in that year, right after that, I'm talking about being in the right place at the right time, Mopati. College football went to eight officials on the field. And so everybody weren't looking for, I mean, they'll probably tell, I know the truth. They probably tell you they were looking for talented guys, but they were looking for bodies. They had to fill these spots. And basically, if you were a decent enough official who was athletic and could move at the position of center judge is where they wanted you at, they would hire you. So I ended up getting hired in American full-time by Terry McCauley. I think that was like 2014, 15 or something like that. And then from that point, I had got interviewed because all along I was in a program called the Football Officials Academy, where they were training minorities, women, retired players on becoming football. So I was getting all the extra training too. So I interviewed for the National Football League. I was still going to camps at the time. And I heard nothing. And I worked a year. So I think that was 15. And then in 16, I got invited to join the ODP, which is at the time it was the ODP. It was the Officials Developmental Program for the National Football League. It was their program. So what that consisted of, I would go to meetings with NFL officials. I would go to training camp. I would go to mini camps. And you could possibly work preseason games, but they stopped doing that for a little while. I didn't work a preseason game until my third year in the developmental program.
2018, right?
Yes, that is right.
With John Perry, the one.
How do you know?
Dude, I did my homework, man.
I guess you didn't do your research. That is correct. Do you know what game?
I don't know the game, but I know that was your first NFL officiating game.
Yeah, well, preseason game. That is correct.
But it still counts as NFL game.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Yeah, that's correct.
And then, okay, so you did that in 2018, and then April of 2019 is when you got the call that you were going to be officially full-time, right?
That's right. So
that day when you got that call.
So at this time, we're working together.
Oh, he'll be back. He'll be back. We're doing well, guys.
You got to keep reminding me. Okay. So, So at this time, I'm at my place of employment, and I'm making my normal rounds. And like you said, this is April of 2019. And I know at this time, I've done everything. I've worked all the mini camps. I've been to all the clinics. And I finally worked the preseason game, right? I shadowed crews. When I say I shadow, that means I go to a game and I'm a part of the crew. I go to the dinners, I go to the meetings, and then I go to the game and I sit up in the replay booth and I watch the game, right? So I did all that like multiple times. I worked all the college all-star games. I worked the East-West Shrine Bowl. I worked Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. So I've done all these games and I've done all this stuff, and I know just from watching and being aware that it's a possibility that I could get rotated out because there's nothing else for me to do. They've seen what I can do, and either they think I'm good enough to become an NFL official, or they're going to rotate me out of the program, and I'll just keep working my college assignments. Well, I'm at our place of employment, and I'm doing my rounds, and then my phone rings, New York area code. So I'm like, oh boy. I was like, this may be it. So it's our SVP, our SVP, Senior Vice President of Officiating, Al Riveron at the time. And he has his second in command, Wayne Mackey. They're on the phone and they're kind of like, all right, they're kind of like, well, we got some good news and we got some bad news. And I'm like, all right. And they was like, which one do you want first? And I'm like, well, give me the bad news because the good news might make my day a little bit better, right? So they tell me that they're rotating me out of the officials developmental program, which I kind of figured they were going to do. But you know what? Like, it's almost like having somebody, and it's kind of morbid, but having somebody pass who's been sick for a long, long time. You know, they've been sick for a long time, and you know it's coming, but it don't really hit you until it comes. And that's kind of like that was that feeling I had when they told me I was out of the ODP, and I just went blank. I was like, and you know, I'm like, damn it. And I kind of forgot about the good news. So
you're blacked out from the bad.
Right. Yeah. Al goes, are you ready for the good news? And then I snapped back into it. I was like, yeah, give me that good news. And he was like, we're rotating you out of the ODP because we're bringing you into the National Football League. And that's how I got the news. Of course, rest was Celebration Station up in our place of employment. And it was a good thing because the timing was impeccable because I was coming up to my last half hour at work. And I wasn't going to be able to get no work done after that anyway.
Right.
So that was a pretty special moment. I jumped from joy. I called my wife, shared the news with her. She thought I was doing a joke, like I do sometimes. It was an amazing, amazing moment.
Oh, love that. Damn. The bad news and the good news. Dang. Okay. Yeah. So you're 5 years into being an NFL official, and this past season. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, guys, every time Terry does an NFL game, I'm watching that game because I just want to see him officiate. Not that I'm going to critique you or anything. I just want to see my boy officiate. So you were officiating the Chiefs and Bills AFC divisional game. And then after the game, I was telling you, I'm like, is your season over and this and that? And you were like, I'm not sure. And then was it that week is where you got the call that you were going to be officiating, be one of the crew members of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, Mupati. You actually do listen to it. So yeah. So when you asked me that, I knew I had a chance.
Yeah.
Because like I knew, like I'm on an outstanding crew, led by Sean Hockley. And shout out, big shout out. Mm-hmm. And I think the whole entire crew had an outstanding season.
Yep.
So I knew I had a chance coming into the divisional, or after working the divisional game. Wasn't for sure, but I knew I had a chance. And, you know, I didn't want to make a big deal and you know, put the cart before the horse. I just wanted to, you know, play it as usual. So the divisional game happens. The championship round comes up. And that crew comes out. And that's on Monday, the Monday after the divisional round. And then Tuesday, the Super Bowl crew is contacted. And I'm on that Tuesday, I'm kind of waiting around, like sitting on pins and needles. Like, it's hard for me to even focus and concentrate on what I need to focus and concentrate on.
Yeah.
So I finally got the call around 11 o'clock. My position coach called me. That was one crazy part about that phone call was he calls me and I see his name come up on my phone and I'm excited. I don't know what he's gonna say, but I got, you know, it's either two things. Like, I'm either working or I'm an alternate. So I'm excited. I pick up the phone. He goes, "Terry, what's up?" And then my phone hangs up. Kind of like what it's been doing throughout this whole podcast.
True.
So it hangs up, and I'm like, what do I do? Do I wait for him to call me back, or do I call him back? So as I'm fiddling around with the phone, he calls me back. And basically, I'm thinking he played a joke on me, because remember, I just told you, like, they were kind of joking me when I first got the phone call to get into the league, right? It was, you know, kind of, they were, you know, kind of making fun or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was thinking he was joking me. So he's asking me, like, what happened in the game and blah, blah, blah. And talking about the divisional, I was like, wait a minute, what do you mean? Like, I thought we worked a pretty good game. I already looked at the film. The film was good. I mean, the video was good. Everything was good. And he was like, nah, he kept saying, and then I could hear him kind of chuckling in the background. I'm like, stop playing. So he was like, you know, he basically told me, he was like, this is the part that he loves, being able to call the guys who are going to work the Super Bowl. He was like, you're going to be the alternate, and I'm going to call the guy. Like, man, he told me, I was like, oh, damn. Like, all right. And that's not a bad thing, being an alternate, but, like, you want to be on the field. And he was like, I'm just playing with you. And just told me, congratulations, you know, you're working, you know, you're actually on the field. And like I said, it reminded me, you know, back in 2019 when I got the call to come into the league. Yeah. But this one was, it was special, but it was kind of sad at the same time, because when I, you know, like I told you before, like, you think about all the things that have gone on in your life and in the past. And I had previously lost my wife when I first got into the National Football League in 2020. She passed of cancer. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know, who to call first? Who do I tell this news to first that I'm working the Super Bowl? And I thought of her immediately. I was like, dang it. And, you know, that kind of hit me and hurt me in that moment of, like, I guess you can call it euphoria. I was excited. I was happy. But, you know, a lot of emotion came with that, too. Yeah. It was awesome. I started, you know, I was about the crazy part was I was about to start making phone calls, but my phone started blowing up. I got so many, like, text messages, emails, DMs. Like, it was very touching to me because of all the people that took the time to reach out to me, appreciated it so much. I tried to get back to everybody. I about killed myself doing it. Like, but I think I did that. I think I was able to reach out and respond to everyone who took the time to reach out to me.
Definitely, man. That whole 2 weeks leading up to game, I think that week when I didn't know that you got the gig, because everyone's like, I think somebody at work, the place of employment, told me, did you hear about Terry? I'm like, what about him? I was like, did he go to yoga class or something? Did he skip? No. He's going to be officiating the Super Bowl. And I was like, wait, what? Because I'm not usually on social media because I'm just taking my break. But when right. I heard that, I like went to your office and you were on the phone with somebody and you were like, I'll see you soon. I'm like, all right, bet. But that whole week, I remember, boy, you looked like you were, I know you were stressed because you were just answering so many messages from people that you probably haven't talked to in like 30 years or something like that. And like people congratulating you, people stopping you to talk to you. It looked like you were president for 8 years, man, with the gray hair. But again, you don't have hair, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Like I said, it was crazy.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, like I said, I appreciated all of it. Like just everything, you know, the people, I mean, and like I say, you know, we work and live in, you know, a small community. And I've always felt like this community has gone, and our place of employment for that matter, has gone above and beyond for you and I in a lot of situations. But you know, like I said, that's why I felt like, and I understood, because like we are very active members in our community. You know, so and people just want to let you know how proud they are of you. And like I said, I appreciate it, everybody. And I know I look stressed and it was tough because it was a lot going on for me at that time too. But it was just an honor and a privilege to have, you know, first of all, to, you know, get the game. And then second of all, for just all the family, friends, coworkers, you know, students, community members, passers by, whatever, just, you know, say a little something. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'm still am really, really proud of you and happy for you, but I am sorry that you didn't take me to the game with you.
Bro, that price tag was something fierce just to get my kids, you know, my family to the game. Like I said, like it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Right. It's no guarantee that I'll get back. I hope that I do. I'm going to work extremely hard to continue trying to be at the top of my game, but there is no guarantee. Yeah. And I wanted my kids to be able to experience it, you know, because I don't know if they would ever be able to experience it, especially with me working. Yeah. So, and they're all of the age where they can see it, understand it, and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that was a biggest thing for me, man, being able, like, working the game was cool, but being able to see them there and them understanding and knowing what I'm doing, and, you know, even the historical part of it, that was pretty awesome. You know, it's nothing like having your family be a part of that, because like I said, when I went to the Super Bowl when I was a player, my wife was pregnant, like 7 months pregnant.
Right.
Yeah, 6 months pregnant with my oldest daughter. So none of my other kids ever seen me play, and they had never been to a game when I played. None of them came to the Super Bowl because they weren't in existence. But this time around, they've all seen me work at a National Football League stadium. And they know what I do. They understand what I do. And they all got to go to the Super Bowl. That, to me, is...
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That is so cool. So let's go to the day of the Super Bowl. Now, we talked about this like a half hour ago. what was the emotions going into being like, you were, okay, so you're a player playing in the Super Bowl with the Titans. Now, what's the difference with that now that you're officiating a Super Bowl? Tell me, how was the preparation like between the two?
So, like I said, leading into Super Bowl 34, the one I played in, I didn't have really a lot of time to think about it.
Yeah.
We won an AFC championship. We got back to on Sunday. We got back to Nashville on Monday. We were leaving for the Super Bowl Monday night, and media day was Tuesday, and then practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, walk through Saturday, Super Bowl. So I didn't have much time to even embrace or enjoy the moment, right?
Yeah.
It was so quick. This time around, I had 3 weeks, bro.
Yeah. Yep.
And somebody told me it was going to be the longest 3 weeks of my life, and it was. Because the hype surrounding it, right? You know, not just for me, like the game, the teams. Kansas City was going back to back. It was a rematch from Super Bowl, how many years ago? I think it was three or four years ago.
It was 2019, yeah. I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, my rookie year. So, yeah, my rookie year. That was the matchup.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
It was a lot of stuff going on in the buildup. And really, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't really, because everything was happening, I didn't really have time to kind of sit back and say, you know what, I'm working the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because it was so many things that were going on, the craziness that was surrounding my life, like at that time with, you know, media, like people getting my number. And I'm like, how do you get my number? Text messages, you know, it was insane. And then, like, I had to take a social media break because I was sick of myself. And I told you that, Mupati, I love me some me, but it was so much. Every time I flick through, you know, I go one story, two, boom, there I go again. And I was like, you know what? I can't. And so I kind of retreated. And that's when, you know, I was back in that office. I kind of retreated. But once we got to Wednesday of Super Bowl week, I knew I was leaving on Thursday, and now I can leave kind of all the stuff in Ohio behind, and now I can start getting into the game. I had already started my preparation. I had 3 weeks to do it, so I kind of went nuts with the video study and all that, you know, and sending plays into my referee. Oh, my gosh. I had so much. I was going back. I went back to the 2019 Super Bowl. like it was 2019 season, 2020 Super Bowl, right before COVID, where literally the only thing I was like, you know, you got a couple different coordinators, but the head coaches are the same. You know, you got different players, but some of the core players are still the same. I was going crazy with it, man. So I get there on Thursday and I'm doing everything I possibly can do. I'm going to the Fritz Pollard Alliance luncheon. We have an officiating dinner. I'm going to the NFL experience. I'm doing all of it. I'm enjoying Vegas. Vegas did not disappoint. On Saturday, I shut it down. We had our pregame meeting that morning. Ate breakfast, went to the pregame meeting. I went to my room after the beating. Took a nap, woke up about 4 o'clock because my oldest son was playing a college basketball game at 7 o'clock Eastern time. I streamed his game. While I was streaming his game, I made my family's dinner reservations to a local establishment that was close enough to the hotel to walk. Watched his game, got up, went to dinner with my family. A friend of mine called me, got me tickets to Circus du Soleil, if I'm saying that right. I hope I am. I wanted to go, but the show didn't start till 9:30. I was like, I need to get my rest because my day is tomorrow. So I wanted to make sure I got my rest. So I sent my kids and their aunt to that show. They had a blast. I got my rest, woke up.
He'll be back. Give it 2 seconds or three.
I'm here. I keep doing that too. So if I get into this, I get into my story and I lose.
Kinda, I know. You're blacking out.
I forget to tap my phone. So I wait. I like I said, my kids go to the Cirque du Soleil show. They have a great time. They come back and tell me about it. I'm already in bed. So they go to their rooms. I get back in bed. Wake up the next morning. Go to breakfast. We got an early morning. Early morning, a long day, because we got to leave. We got to get to the. We usually get to the stadium 3 hours prior to the kick, but this time I think we got there like 3 and a half. My son was coming into town that day. I was after his game. I was nervous about him getting there. He got there on time. Yeah, I was telling you that story. He got there on time. I knew when he got there, I knew everything was going to be all right.
Yeah.
So they were having a send off for us and down in the hotel lobby. All the families met down in there. We got our hugs and our kisses, took pictures, said our goodbyes. We got on that bus and went to the game, and we had to sit around for 3 hours. So I took a nap. My supervisor got a picture of me taking a nap prior. Like, he was like, you talking about relax going into the Super Bowl? I was extremely relaxed. Took a nap. Started getting ready. I went out for pregame. We did all the stuff that we normally do, but everything was kind of early because, you know, you got a lot of presentations and things going on that are different from a regular season and even a playoff game in a Super Bowl. The thing where I felt the most nerves was during the national anthem, because that's a moment for me. A long time ago, when I first started in Division II, I had a mentor who once told me when he worked in the Big Ten, that was when he took his moment in during the national anthem. And I kind of copied that from him. So after that conversation I had with him, every time I would be out on the field for the national anthem, I would be moving around. I'm paying attention, but I'm taking in the moment. I'm looking up in the stands. I'm looking at the crowd. I'm listening to the music, and I'm feeling it. Like, I'm into it. My whole being is into that moment, and I'm taking it all in. And I love doing that at every stadium. Cincinnati, Kansas City, New York, any stadium in the National Football League, I do it the same way. So at that moment, that's when my nerves kicked in and I got to rocking. And I'll never forget after the game when I was talking to my daughter, one of my daughters, she was like, "Daddy, I could tell you were kind of nervous, right?" And I, like I told you before, nerves aren't a bad thing. you get nerves and you're nervous because you care about something. It means something to you.
Yeah.
I'm not nervous because I'm prepared. I'm nervous because I'm passionate about what I'm doing. That's what makes me have butterflies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at that moment I was, but when that ball was kicked off, I was just ready to work a football game. I know it was the Super Bowl, but not one time in that game did I ever think, "Whoa, this is the Super Bowl." It was just like any other game that I officiated in my 5-year career in the National Football League. That was my second time having the San Francisco 49ers that season, and that was my third time having the Kansas City Chiefs.
Man, it just felt like a regular football game. Once you got after the national anthem, you're just like, "I'm just ready to work." You were just locked in.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys did a really good job. Everybody was like, leading up to this game, they're like, "Oh, they're officiating. They're going to decide the game. Ain't going to be any controversy calls." No, that was you guys did a damn good job. I'm glad that there weren't any controversy calls. You officiated one of the best Super Bowl games, the ending with the walk-off touchdown in overtime. At that moment, when McKinnon caught that touchdown, did you like sprint it out of there? Because obviously the confetti of the red and white for the Chiefs were going down. Did you like made a beeline to the locker room?
So that's what I normally do. I gotta I usually get up out of there. I don't want to, you know, when the game is over, the game is over. Like, those teams start walking out on the field, they're coming through that handshake. I don't want to get caught in that. So normally I'm out of there. But this was the last game of the season. And I got a lot of good advice about working the Super Bowl. Some of that advice was, don't rush off the field.
Right.
Get out of the way, of course, but get to a area in the stadium where you can turn and look and take all of it in. And it's about the moment.
For sure.
And I'm telling you, the whole crew did it. Walked to the corner of that end zone, closest to our locker room, and we all just stood there. Nobody said nothing to it was pretty cool and surreal. Nobody said anything. Everybody just watched and looked. The confetti was coming down. You know what I'm saying? I grabbed some of it because I kept some of it as a souvenir. I loaded my hat up with it. and we just took in the moment, man. And it was an awesome moment. And then they started building the stage, and what broke it, it was our referee Bill Vinovich was like, all right, you know, like, let's get out the way. And then that broke me, because like I said, nobody was saying nothing. But when that voice came, we still had our earpieces in. When that voice came over the earpiece, at that moment, I was like, I'm good. And that's when I took it into the locker room. Pretty much everybody else came in too at that time.
That's awesome. Did you run into Taylor Swift or Kelsey brothers or Mahomes?
Nah, you know, it was a Jay-Z sighting. You know, a few celebrities were around. Post Malone did American the Beautiful, Reba McEntire did the national anthem. When we did our walkthrough for the coin toss on Friday, they were everything that happened in prior to the kick.
Right.
That was all practiced on Friday, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's crazy that you officiated Super Bowl, but not only that, your favorite singer performed the halftime show in Usher.
Oh, Usher, baby? Yeah, dog. Now, yo, that was a treat. Now, and you know what? And I think about that. I was meant to work this Super Bowl. I don't fanboy a lot. You know what I'm saying? I didn't get an opportunity to meet him, but I did watch the halftime show. I did see him in concert. Usher got me to do two things I never thought I would do: buy a guitar and buy roller skates. like when Usher first came out, everybody know this song, Nice and Slow. It's 7 o'clock on the dot. I'm in my drop top. In that video and in that song, he has a little scene where he's plucking a guitar. Like, I wanted to learn them chords, so I went out and bought a 6-string. Now, that was back in the 90s, I think. Late 90s, that is. Yeah. Then, here we go, fast forward. You know, I've been an Usher fan for a long time. He got on that, everybody started getting roller skates back in my day.
Like the movie ATL.
Like the movie ATL. My mother was a awesome roller skater. So she used to take us roller skating all the time. I hadn't been roller skating in, I don't know, at least 25 years before I got some roller skates, man. So friend of mine, we this was probably like around 2021, because we weren't wearing masks at the time. I had started skating in my cul-de-sac, and then I started going to a skating rink that's close to me. And I was like, ain't too many people can get me to buy a guitar and go roller skate. And I ain't put on the roller skates in a while, and my guitar sitting up in the garage.
Man, you gotta break out the roller skates. I mean, you're gonna go skiing here real soon, so why not?
Bro, who knows? Who knows? Who knows? I might show up with them at our place of employment. You know, that'll drive them crazy. I'll be definitely poking the bear in that moment.
Oh, for sure. They'll just be staring at you and be like, man, that's just Terry.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow, man. That was a lot, but hey, this is probably the longest podcast episode I've ever done.
I know. I know. We're going on an hour and a half. You gonna let me go? Cause I done told you from the almost the beginning to the end. I left out. I was supposed to be making my stew tonight, and it's 8:30 already, and it takes me an hour to cut up all my ingredients for my stew.
You literally called me and saying that, okay, I gotta make dinner. I'm like, hey, do that before the podcast at 7.
But I gotta cut up my stuff though. I still gotta cut up my stuff.
Man, I haven't eaten dinner yet either. So it's like it's gonna be a late ass dinner for me too. Mm-hmm. And I gotta watch UC play.
Well, yeah, that's coming on, but we not eating it. I'm just cooking it. I'm getting ahead of the game, and I'm preparing it.
Gotcha. Well, sir, it was an honor to finally do this podcast. This was like a year in the making, because the first time I delayed it because there's a rule. Since now you're officially an NFL official, well, for the last 5 years, there's like a period, right, where you can't talk to media. It's the first week of May, or when is that, when you like can't talk to like media?
It's the first week of May. It's when our official season starts.
So after his season ended last year, I was like, all right, let's do the podcast. You're like, all right, do it. And that was my fault. I kept delaying it, and then May came around, and I was like, damn it. But I think this was great, man. And like I said, I am very, very proud of you for all your success. And before we go, do you want to tell anybody out there that is trying to work towards their dreams? It doesn't have to be official. It can be anything. Give them a word of advice.
Simple, stay the course. Your journey may not be or may not take that standard road, and you definitely gonna hit some bumps in it, but just stay the course, because if you believe and it's a dream of yours, don't let anything stop you.
Preach. Well, my man, been a pleasure, and I know that everyone's looking forward to this episode. This episode will probably be live either tomorrow, which I'm recording this on a Thursday. So Friday morning, this episode will be live. So I know pretty much all my followers are looking forward to hearing this amazing story of you, Terry. So appreciate you, my guy. Hey, come back to the podcast, man, whenever.
you already know. Yeah, definitely. You can count me in.
Yeah, we can talk about anything, man. We can talk about the NBA, talk about, you know, the NFL, go deep into the, you know, just talk about the, you know, just in general, you know, like your opinions on certain players, coaches. No, I'm joking on that.
Yeah, I know you're joking. That's why you ain't hear no chuckling out of me.
I don't want to get you in trouble. We're good. All right, man. Yeah. All right, man. I appreciate you coming on this podcast, and we'll do this again, all right?
Absolutely, bro.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right, you too.
Peace. Wow.